PPI.org.
Welcome, and thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into, ideas about, and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to catch our podcasts, we are there. You may look us up and or ask your smart speaker to play the latest version of Disability and Progress, and it will happen. Check us out. We've got lots of them up there. Also, we are on your smartphone app. You may hear us. And or go to kfai.org/disabilityandprogress to listen to the archives. Did you notice, Charlene, I didn't say good evening or anything. I said welcome. Charlene Dahl is my research woman.
Good evening, everyone.
I'm trying to be more global so people don't know what time we're doing it, even though it's probably obvious somewhere along the way. This week, we are speaking with artist Annie Young, who will be talking about her... Well, about what she's been doing with her last 4 years. She will be talking about her exhibit, which is titled Journey to Rock Bottom. And we will hopefully hear all about her running the marathon in Antarctic ice marathon. And we're also going to be talking with her fellow artist who helped her, Sherry, pronounce your last name for me.
Groovy.
Groovy. All right. Groovy. All right. Excellent. Thank you. And Annie Young. All right. Thank you guys for joining me. And we're going to be talking about, as we said, her exhibit, Journey to Rock Bottom, and her marathon. Annie, it's been a long time.
I know. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm good. How are you?
Gosh, I think it's been close to 20 years.
Don't say that.
Okay, we won't say that.
We're both still 29. What's wrong with you?
Oh, that's right. We were babies.
I know. Well, you know, we were very mature children.
I stand still.
Yeah. Anyway, well, it's really good to talk with you again, and I'm glad to still see you are just out there and doing wild things. And so I want to talk a little bit about, because I'm not sure how much you want to go into that time, but I do want to give a little bit of history on you as far as what you're willing to share and talk about your history, because you have a visual disability. I don't know if you've always had that. I'm guessing you haven't.
That's correct. Okay. Yes, I am. So I started losing my eyesight in my late 30s. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're right. We can share how we know each other. Okay. I attended Vision Loss Resources when I was in my early 40s, and it was because I started losing my eyesight due to rod cone dystrophy.
And if I recall, you had teenagers then.
I did, yes. Yes.
Driving you insane.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't worry, I've got one. They all do it.
Oh, yeah, well, now they're grown and have families of their own, and they've made me a grandmother. So,
oh, congratulations. And then they complain, and you just laugh, right? You're like, ha, ha, ha. What comes around goes around.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And so...
Yes. So life is quite different, but you're right. I, if anything, what Vision Loss Resources taught me through my... long and arduous time there. No, they were really good. Is to, you know, life goes on. Something happens, you know, you you go through a transition in life.
Certainly is.
You got to keep moving. You got to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I've tried to do, is keep moving forward. So when opportunities present themselves, you can either say no, maybe, or yes. And what do you think, Sherry? I think I'm more of, I've become more of a yes gal. So
I don't know. I always found you trying to push through to the yes part, though. So it took a little bit of adjustment, but I think if you didn't have an adjustment time, I would have been worried about you. Or you would have been just like amazingly, you know, exceptional and over and above and beyond, which you are anyway. But so I want to talk a little bit about, you're a painter.
Yes.
So, yes. So can you talk about how that plays into, like, do you have adaptions? What do you do? Because I can't imagine how that was when you were losing vision, like still painting.
Well, I wasn't a painter before. Primarily what transpired is I had a really good friend who knew I always had this creative side of me. And I gave a lot of that up after I lost my sight. And she just thought that that was something I didn't have to give up. And one day she came over to my home with a blank piece of canvas or blank canvas and some paints. And she said, you know, I think that you should try painting. And it was funny because the canvas that she brought to my house, I could feel it, and it was a used canvas. And I remember saying to her, well, if you think that I should be, that I could do this art, and you think that I'm so, you know, that I should be so good at it, why are you giving me a used canvas? And she said, a lot of people paint over canvases. And I remember being frustrated with her, and I sent her out of my house. Aww. And she came back the next day to check on me, and she said, oh, what did you do? And I said, I didn't do anything with it. And I said, you need to go, because I'm still mad at you.
Aww.
And she came back the next day, and she said, I'm just curious if you've done anything with those paint supplies I gave you. And I said, no, I haven't. And so she left again that day, and I was actually really quite upset. And so she left the house, and I just remember being so upset that I kind of tossed the canvases and the paints on the floor, that I made such a mess because the paint tubes splattered all over the floor.
Uh-oh.
And my kids came home from school, and they looked at me, and they're like, Mom, do we have to clean that up? And their dad said, no, you know, you're not going to have to clean that up. She's going to clean that up. And I'm like, I'm not cleaning it up. And I remember going to my room, going to bed. And the next day I thought to myself, I'm going to have to clean that stuff up. So I remember basically being on my hands and knees, going to close to the front door and feeling the floor to feel that for the paint that had, you know, scattered all over, thinking that, oh, it's going to be a slimy mess. And, you know, the paint had dried kind of, the best way I could describe it is like, you know, when you have dried toothpaste, mm-hmm, on your surface of your bathroom vanity.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly how it felt. And that was my aha moment. And I thought, oh, I know how I can paint. I can just squeeze the paint out of the paint tubes. And that was how I initially started painting, was just squeezing the paint directly out of the tube. And yeah, my friend here is laughing because that is initially how I started painting, is just squeezing the paint out of the tube, wait for it to dry so I could feel where it was at on the canvas. And then I would wait and apply the next layer of color. And that's how it all began.
Now, I am curious, because having vision, you know, before this, you would have a pretty good idea of probably memory of how things looked and images and things like that. So the idea of images and colors probably were fairly clear. Yes?
Yes.
And yeah. So that must have given you at least a little bit of a leeway, so to speak, if you want to use that you were able to do that. did you feel like, what was the comments you got when you were not too far down the road with that, like with your painting? What were people saying? Like, were you close to the mark of what you were trying to do, or were you?
No, yeah, people are always, I think people's first impressions of my work are, they want to know if I know what color is, mm-hmm. if I can recognize color. Initially, I think they don't realize that I previously had sight. Mm, so once they realize that, then they have the reassurance that, oh, okay, she understands color. And my paintings are quite simple, Sam. I don't do, you know, really elaborate subject matter. I did have a teacher, Eric Menshuber, who was instrumental in helping me to mm-hmm. understand composition and shape. He was the one who helped me to calculate how to bend solder wire so I could shape, design shape on the canvas. And
cool.
He's the one who thought, hey, why don't we use painter's tape so you could, he's the one who initiated painter's tape so I would know where I was at on the canvas.
Yeah.
And he taught me like the rule of thirds so I would know how to compositionally make something pleasing to the eye for a visual viewer of my paintings. When I first came to Eric, he reminded me of this the other day. I brought to him tubes of paint. I was basically only using like 6 or 7 colors.
Right.
And I wasn't mixing any colors. And I was basically just painting with my fingertips or squeezing the paint out of the tubes. But he taught me how to use my body parts. Like I would squeeze dollops that were the size of my fingernail on my pinky finger. And he taught me how to make different recipes using my body parts so I could start mixing paints. And he was also the one that gave me the confidence to start painting with a paintbrush. So that was very transformative for me, because up until that time, I was only painting with my fingertips. I was always very apprehensive to be separated from touching the canvas, because I always wanted to know exactly where I was on the canvas. I wanted to have that tactile.
Right. The closest sense of
physical touch. Yeah. I want to know exactly where I was.
That totally makes sense, though. That makes mm-hmm. a lot of sense. And just little, it sounds like it's just little adjustments that you had to make. What was the what was the biggest thing that you learned early on with doing something like this?
I would say the biggest thing I learned was to trust my instinct. That after a while, I had to just believe that the images that were coming to me in my mind's eye, which Sam, as many people know that follow me, I get these images that come to me in my dreams. Mm-hmm. And also that what comes to me in my dreams is the process of how to create those paintings. And I just have to trust them. And my friend here, Sherry, she's painted with me before, and she got a taste for what it was like of how I bring those to fruition. Right, Sherry?
Yes. A couple of years ago, when COVID first started and the world was going crazy, we collaborated on a painting, and she used different templates, which I found interesting, which I wouldn't have thought to do, I guess, as a sighted person, but, mm-hmm. it was interesting to see her process, I guess, of how she, added things to a painting.
Gotcha. Well, I'm curious to know, maybe you don't want to tell it, but did you ever ask your kids, like, kids are brutally honest, especially when they're teenagers. I'm just curious what their reactions were when you started doing this.
Well, they were pretty busy with their own lives. Every once in a while, I'd ask my older son, because mm-hmm. he was a student of art at the time. And yes, he would be very brutally honest. But also, art is very subjective. Uh-huh. So what happens is when you start asking other people for their opinion, it would get confusing, because the difference, I think, between when I paint and maybe a sighted person painting, my mind's eye had already told me what I needed to do. It had already predetermined the subject matter. It had already predetermined the colors I was using. And it had already predetermined the composition. So it, I don't know how to explain this. As much as, like, how do I explain this, Sherry? When Sherry's painting a painting, Sherry is looking at it. She's developing her painting as she's looking at it and painting it, correct?
For the most part. And I too kind of sometimes dream about it and think about it long and hard, I guess, daydream about it and think about, wow, what can I use to accomplish this, you know, painting, and, you know, am I going to add some kind of a texture to it, or am I just going to make it smooth, or, you know, what kind of paint am I going to use, and that kind of thing. So, you know, there's many techniques that kind of go into a painting in general. So it's not like it's cut and dried. Nope, it's one way and that's it, or the highway, you know.
Yeah, but mine are like that.
But
so
mine,
it sounds
kind of like that.
So yours are more so that way. But for a sighted person, it's, you know, you can use many different things.
Because, like, you'll come over and say, "Well, what's next?" And I'll tell you,
"Yeah,
yep, I'm going to do this," and you'll be like, "Oh, okay," because I know what's next, because it's already determined.
It sounds like yours kind of come to you fully formed.
And exactly. Yeah. So I know, like, this is the first layer. This is the second layer. This is the next layer. And I know what color I'm going to use. They're all lined up. And it's already, like, my canvas or whatever. I mostly paint, but yeah, the canvas is there. And every color that I'm using is already determined. And when I'm going to add it is already decided.
So I want
to. So for me to ask somebody's opinion, mm-hmm. it would be kind of pointless, because it's pretty much already decided. It is very rare, because I paint on the floor, right. I have bumped a painting and accidentally spilled paint on it and messed it up. So then I have to have someone come in and say, okay.
Here's what to fix it with.
Yep. Yeah. Because I have spilled stuff on paintings. I think that happened right one time you came in.
Yeah.
One time I did spill paint on a painting. I'm like, Sherry, what did I do? Aww. And Sherry and her daughter did help me one time with, I had a painting that I pretty much thought was done. And then her daughter said, you know, you might want to consider
adding a little shadow here.
Yep. And I did do that. I did do that. So, and it was a lovely touch.
It did nice.
It did nice.
It turned out well.
So what was the first most significant piece that you did that you were very proud of?
The answer to that. When my first granddaughter was born, or waiting to be born, I painted this piece called Confetti Susan.
Aww.
And see, you're already going to make me cry. And I still remember that dream very explicitly. It's a huge sunflower. It's 36 by 36. And inside of the center of the sunflower has every single color of the paint that was in my studio at the time she was born.
Aww.
And the reason it's called Confetti Susan is because, it's not a sunflower. Everyone thinks it's a sunflower. It's actually a black-eyed Susan, because her mother's best friend was named Susan. And it's a brilliant, bold, you know, yellow flower with a brown center. But I wanted my granddaughter to know that even though her grandma is blind, that her grandma can do things, mm-hmm. you know, that there's no limitation. Right. And so every time she sees that painting and she looks at that, she says, Grandma, those are all the colors, right, that were in your studio at the time that I was born. I'm like, yep, that's it, Ayla. So
Aw. I want to get into your exhibit, but first I want to just talk about, you're a runner. And I remember this about you, that you exercised all the time. And I remember that being one of your releases when you were at VLR. Yeah. You were always exercising. I was like, oh, there's Annie. She's, but that was really cool. And I was wondering, because when you do marathons, like what do you use? And this will help other people who are visually impaired and want to do marathons. Maybe they used to be runners and then lost their vision and they don't know what to do. So what do you do to navigate terrain, and how do you do that?
Okay. Well, first of all, the reason you saw me always exercising is because I was still kind of frustrated with losing my sight. Mm-hmm. So that was my
That was your
relief.
Outlet. That was good.
She was ADHD, but you know. Just a little high strung.
It was a much better outlet than some of the students. Trust me on this one.
Yes. And back then I was doing triathlons. Mm. So that's still my favorite sport. But, I either have someone who is a sighted guide, which is really hard to find these days.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So I used to have a membership at the Y. I don't know. And so believe it or not, Sam, I use my roller tip.
Really?
Yes, it's crazy because I do get a lot of belly jabs.
I bet you do.
So what I do is, I'm fortunate because I live where there's really long stretches of bike path. Mm-hmm. So I use the bike path and just trail using my roller tip. And trust me, I go through a lot of roller tips.
Wow.
Another thing that I use is I have called upon Ira from time to time.
Yes. And I'm well familiar with them.
Yep. And I've asked them, hey, can you guys just guide me for a little bit? And they'll do that every once in a while.
Cool.
But mostly, you know, I just use my roller tip and run. I do a run walk because, you know, that's all I can do.
I
know my bike path fairly well.
Yeah. That's cool.
Elliptical, you know, elliptical is a good way to train. And so is now, believe it or not, during COVID, people really think this is insane, but ran in my living room. I made a triangle. My friend is laughing here. I made a triangular touch point in my living room, and I ran between my front door, the stairs, and the kitchen in a triangular, you know, running path, and ran for hours in my townhouse.
Mm. Mm. Wow. Well,
yeah.
I want to talk.
I was desperate.
As many people were. We're speaking with Annie Young and Sherry Gruby, and they're talking about many things, but Annie was talking about her last 4 years in the exhibit that she did called Journey to Rock Bottom, and her marathon that she ran in the Antarctic Ice Marathon. I think that's right, Annie?
Yes. Let's clarify. I personally did not run the entirety of the marathon.
How far did you go?
I only ran 10 miles.
Okay, that's 9 miles more than I would have done. But
me too.
I just want to ask.
I got injured part of the way, so I wasn't able to complete it.
Aww.
But I am proud of what I did, what I was able to run, and that's okay. The point is, I said yes to going down there, even though I was scared out of my mind, and you know, I went down there. Even though, as you know, a lot of us, we use technology, mm-hmm. and our technology is reliant on satellite. And
right.
It wasn't going to be my ability to use any of my technology. I had to do kind of everything old school. So I had to rely on my ability to read my braille. my clothes were brailled. And I had to use sighted guide because obviously there's no surface to navigate. So
right.
I had to rely on just... the kindness of others to sighted guide me throughout the camp and things like that. So,
and I do want to point out to people who are not familiar with sighted guide, when you're using a guide, especially when, if you don't know them, it's a whole new, it's like a dance. Would you describe it that way? Just like a dance. And you learn each other, like how their movements are and how they cue you with things. And if you're new with a sighted guide, there's going to be bumps and oopses and, oh, sorry, and whatever else might come. So I can't imagine doing a marathon there with, if it was a new guide. I'm curious to know what possessed you to even think about that.
My husband was my person that provided sighted guide. So I was fortunate to go down there with my husband. Good. Yeah. Yeah. So that was okay. Yeah.
And he's a marathoner too, or at least.
Yes. My husband is currently running a marathon in every state. And also he's trying to run a marathon on every continent.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about a goal.
Yeah. He's very driven.
So what you talk about the marathon, kind of how it gave you this idea of this exhibit.
Right.
Talk a little bit about
when
that.
When I was there, we had inclement weather that had us stay there longer than we would normally stay. Normally, folks arrive on Union Glacier Camp. They run the marathon. They're there for maybe a day, two at the most, and then they return back to South America. Mm-hmm. But because this blizzard-like weather came in, we were stuck there close to a week. And we got to know each other fairly well. And there was a gentleman who collected all of our contact information and created a WhatsApp group. And through the course of us connecting on that WhatsApp group, we got to continue those relationships. And I started talking to each of these individual athletes after the fact and asked them if they would share with me, you know, why they wanted to travel to Antarctica, to, you know, the bottom of the earth, to this desolate continent, and what prompted them to want to run this race. And they trusted me with these stories. And I think as we started having these conversations, that's what, you know, started creating these images in my mind's eye. I started dreaming these dreams and started getting these really wonderful pictures in my mind's eye that I had to create. I had to, you know, I was getting pictures that I needed to paint. Mm-hmm. I was getting images that I wanted to create in clay and wood. And my friend here, Sherry, helped me to create these sculpture pieces. And and before I knew it, I was creating a collection, an entire collection, which were very inspirational. And I just knew that the community at large would benefit from these inspirational stories. And especially Sherry, after COVID or during COVID, when we were creating them, there were so many people that were really down in the dumps and depressed.
Yeah.
And we thought, we got to get these stories told, so between Sherry and I, we thought, oh, there's also other artists that we could invite to help me with the last few pieces of works that needed to be created.
Right.
And, you know, Sherry, as you know, also is a person who lives with a disability. She has dystonia. She's going to share a little bit about that. Go ahead, Sherry.
Yeah, I have cervical dystonia and oral mandibular dystonia, which affects my jaws and my neck and my shoulder. And of course, there's no cure. September is Dystonia Awareness Month.
Oh, I did not know that.
It's primarily a muscular thing. You know, I say that, you know, I equate my cervical dystonia like, say you have a Charlie horse in your leg or something.
Uh-huh.
Well, say you have a Charlie horse in your neck and it stays there 24/7 until you get your treatment of Botox, which seems to be like the only thing that actually works to relieve that. And it just kind of, you know, takes care of that abnormal posture and stuff that I get, because, you know, I do wake up in the middle of the night and my neck is literally touching my shoulder, and you kind of go, oh, I can't sleep anymore. Hello.
That does sound so painful.
I deal with that, and I have found that painting, you know, when I'm tremoring bad and I look all shaky and crazy. I was teaching some friends at one time, and I picked up a paintbrush, and they were like, oh my gosh, you're not tremoring right now. And I'm like, really? I'm thinking to myself, hey, I got to paint more. So that's how I learned that painting, you know, does help with those issues as well, because your brain is just focusing on something else. But you can get dystonia pretty much any part of your body. It just doesn't do smooth muscles like your heart, lungs, your stomach, that kind of thing. But it can affect you anywhere and feel like, you know, your muscles are contracting oddly, and you have odd movements and that kind of thing. So we are having a dystonia zoo walk this Sunday at the Como Zoo as well, and you can register in person for that if anybody's interested in that as well.
Cool. All right. So how many people did you invite to do this creative exhibit?
Nine other artists. So there's nine pieces that I invited, nine artists. And then I also invited Corey Walton, who is a spoken word performer. He's I'm not doing him justice. he's a playwright and spoken word artist performer. He told my story. So all the runners, they all have a piece that tells the story of them and who they are and how their journey was presented in this collection. Mm-hmm. And then somebody said, well, what about you, Annie? And I thought, oh yeah, I guess someone should tell my story. So I reached out to Corey, who's a good friend of mine, and he took some inspiration from my journal, and he created a spoken word piece that he's going to perform at this Saturday during the reception, the artist reception.
And what time will that be?
From 5:30 to 8 p.m. The AIM Center in Burnsville.
Were you and Sherry the only people with disabilities on this exhibit?
I would guess that.
Yeah, I think so. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, you never know, right? Because there could be hidden disabilities. One never really knows. Unless somebody.
Yes, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
Unless somebody tells you.
Exactly. So some of the other artists, when I say that's inclusive, there's artists from all walks of life, and I don't know how to politically correct say that. So
yeah,
that
it's okay. Don't worry.
Yeah. Okay. And there's also from all genres of art. So some of the artists are watercolor, pastel, oil. There's woodsmith. I know I'm going to forget something.
Acrylic.
And then also the way that they do art. So we have someone who does realist landscapes. So it's just amazing how... Oh, chalk work too.
Yeah, chalk. Yeah.
And then each of those artists also have a different relationship to me. For example, Eric Menshuber was my teacher. Bonnie Featherstone was the artist who actually started the Burnsville Visual Arts Society way back when. Wow. Christine Tierney, she was the first person who ever did art with me, and we did like dual shows together. Richard Mittelstadt was somebody who had always been like my go-to mentor. Eric Kellen was the first person who ever gave me an arts in residency for wood. Bob Schmidt is, he's the first artist that I dialed up to look for an Asian brushstroke artist. So everyone has a different story. Margie Grill and I, we were the first artists that I ever did a collaborative artist opportunity together in St. Paul years ago, and so we all have an interesting story together to tell, and that's how each of these artists were selected too.
Annie, you said this took 4 years in the creativity. What made it take so long, or what made it take the time it did take?
Well, you can imagine there were 57 other runners. So that's quite a bit of art to create.
Wow.
Yeah, that is. And the other thing is, I wanted to tie it into the 40th anniversary of the Twin Cities Medtronic anniversary marathon, which is also this weekend.
Oh, cool.
So I thought, well, what is one way that I could try to encourage my friends to come see this collection that I painted that was inspired by them? Oh yeah, let me see if I can tie it into a marathon, which they all love to run. So
all right, go ahead.
It was still quite difficult. I mean, I was really pushing myself this last year to get all these works done.
So to ask the tricky question, is this accessible?
Oh, yes. In fact, on the 15th of October, so
coming
next weekend, there is an accessibility tour for persons. There's ASL and audio description tour, which I will be there for those who have a hearing challenge or who are visually impaired and blind.
So talk about when this is, where this is, and how it will work.
Okay, it's at the AM Center. It's at 10:30 to 11:30. And it's a tour where, forgive me, Sam, and I'll probably say this incorrectly. We have ASL interpreters who are going to be there to, as I take and give a personal tour of the exhibit, they will be interpreting for the deaf community.
Okay.
Persons who come through that are deaf.
Yep.
I don't know, is that correct?
Go for it.
Okay. And then persons who are visually impaired or blind, we have an audio describer.
Yes. Okay,
yep.
Cool.
So, yep, and that's on the Saturday, October 15th from 10:30 to 11:30.
And where again?
At the AIM Center. It's right at where the exhibit in Burnsville, at the AIM Center in Burnsville.
And do people need to sign up for it, or can they show up?
Nope. They just show up. It's free. And also the exhibit goes on through November 5th, and the AIM Center itself is completely accessible. And I have large print and Braille booklets available. They can just pick them up at the box office.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you really worked hard to try to make this accessible. I wonder,
yes.
Is there anything, like, can people do anything? Because this is really, I try to do global shows. And so, even though I feature people, I do feature some people, obviously, you know, from Minnesota. I do try to, because we're all over the place now. Can people go online and see the exhibit or hear anything with it?
Yeah. Well, on my website, which, do you want me to share what that is?
Yes, I do.
Okay. It's it's annieyoungarts.com. There is a blog that has all of the artwork and the stories behind the artwork. And for any person who is has accessibility, that also has the descriptions on it as well.
You know, I did notice that when I got on your website, it described the picture of you there. I thought, that's cool. Okay, she's aware.
Yeah,
you are.
I try to do my best. It as you know, it is very difficult to keep up with all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I have tried to do my very best. And if persons find anything that is not describe, they can always, there's a contact page. They can always write to me and let me know if there was an oversight. But for the most part, I think the images have descriptions. But of course, there's some that get through and get overlooked. But please let me know, and I will make sure that I make that correction.
And is your contact info on the website? I imagine so.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So they can just click on email you. Okay. Yep. AnnieYoungArts.com.
Yes, AnnieYoungArts.com. Correct.
See, told you, you'd always stay young. See?
Yes, that's right.
So what's your next adventure?
Well, funny that you should ask. My husband and I are planning to travel to South America. He's attempting to run a volcano marathon in November. And I'm going to try to do some distance, whether it be a half or possibly a 10K.
Wow. Okay, then.
Yeah.
And
so wish me luck.
Good luck. I would say break a leg, but that just sounds wrong when you're running a marathon.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, don't do that. But before we leave, I do want to say one thing that's really important. My goal in all of this, and I know it sounds really corny, but a few years ago, I heard this quote from Audrey Hepburn, and mm-hmm. I've kind of adopted it as my mantra, and it's from Audrey Hepburn. I heard that she once said, the words "I'm possible" are found in the word "impossible." Mm-hmm. I just love that quote, and I've been sharing it with everyone.
I do like that, too. I really thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I just love it. And it just was an aha moment for me. So I hold on to that near and dear to my heart, and I share it whenever I can.
And so I'm curious to understand, when you're painting, are you actually... Is it actually images like people image, or is it abstract kind of? What do you?
You do a lot of flowers.
I do a lot of flowers. Yeah. Okay. So it's funny you should ask, because this exhibit, I have a lot of people that have already seen the exhibit that mm-hmm. walk away saying, "This doesn't look like anything you've ever done before," mm-hmm. because most. 90% of the things I typically paint are flowers or trees or dragonflies. So this particular exhibit really has none of that in it. But that's what I normally paint, Sam, is a lot of flowers, a lot of dragonflies, and a lot of birch trees.
Is this the most difficult exhibit you've done?
It is. Yeah, it has been by far the most challenging. And I'm really glad that I did it, because it
was a challenge. I mean, she would describe, okay, I want to make a world, you know, a globe kind of thing. And, you know, for me to, you know, as a sighted person, I was still like,
It literally took us 3 years.
Oh my gosh, it took forever.
Yeah, that took a lot.
That was so hard.
It was so hard, and it took like everything, every step took like months. We'd have to do something, wait a few months, and then we'd have to do another layer. Then it took another few months.
Well, it was all kind of paper mache'd and.
Even my husband.
There's just so much to do on it.
Even my husband got involved towards the very end to help out with that. I mean, that was all hands on deck to help with that.
It was a tough project, but we got it done. Hooray!
Yeah. And also the thing with that, like every time she would say, well, why don't we do that? No, it has to be this. Because I knew it was such a critical, important piece. I just would not give up on what was in my mind's eye. I was like, we're going to find a way. We're going to find a way to make this work, because I know we can make it work. Isn't it spectacular?
It is spectacular. It turned out really nice. So I love it.
It's the most amazing thing in the whole exhibit. Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a big globe, and it looks like it's up on, I don't know, I want to call it a torch, an Olympic torch. It looks like it's up there.
It's spectacular.
It's just so cool to see.
It's the whole reason. That's the why it's called Journey to Rock Bottom, because it looks like a big rock that is emblematic of the globe.
The world.
Yeah.
You talk briefly. You talk about how you feel inclusivity is so important, and talk about why you personally feel inclusivity is important.
Because when you talk about persons with disabilities, it kind of feels like you're being distant, separated. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about inclusivity, then everyone is included. Mm. We're all included, right? So that's why we think it's important. We want people to feel included. You're in the group, you're included. And so, you know, we all have...
we all have something wrong with us. I mean, you know,
different.
Well, different. About,
We all have different
abilities. And that's why we say disability instead of disability, because we all have different abilities, whether you're sighted or not sighted. And I mean, you know, everyone can do something that the other person can't do possibly. And we all try to find common ground that way.
Yeah.
I like the quote that you use, if you dream it, believe it, you can achieve it, you just don't have to do it alone. What brought you to that?
You know, that came because my husband, I got, like I said, I had like 75% of this collection done, and I was really frustrated because I was down to those last few pieces, and my husband's like, what's wrong? And I said, I literally can't. And I don't use that word can't, as you know, Sam, I very rarely use that word. I said, I can't do this one particular piece. And he said, why don't you ask for help? And I said, cause I want it to be my exhibit. I want it to be, you know, and he said, Annie, did you run that race by yourself? And I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, yeah. Did you run in Antarctica by yourself? And I said, well, no. He said, that's right. I guide you. So why do you think that you have to do this all by yourself? And I thought, oh yeah, he's right. So, you know, if you have something that you want to achieve, it's okay to know your limitations, to acknowledge them, and then ask for help. Because honestly, none of us get where we're at in life by ourselves. Mm, you know,
we all had help.
Yeah. And it's okay to ask for help to get there. And you know what? I have to tell you, it's so much better to get to the finish line surrounded by friends. I feel so great to have Sherry here with me today. And I feel fantastic to have these friends that helped me to finish off that collection, because it's a celebration and a party with friends. And it just feels so much better to be there surrounded by those that love and care for you and want to see you succeed than to stand there alone.
This next question is probably something you could dwell on for a while, but has to be quick. How have you found having a visual impairment? Like, have you found your art accepted as well as if you hadn't had one?
Well, since I wasn't an artist when
excited,
I guess.
But do you feel like people are pretty accepting?
For me, you know, when I tell people, oh, I have a friend who paints, and then they're like, you know, and then they read, you know, come and see her exhibit or see her work. And we've exhibited elsewhere, you know, together and stuff. And they're like, wait a minute, that sign that she has put up says she's blind. How in the world? How does she paint when she's blind? You know, and I'm like, I don't know how she does it sometimes. It just amazes me and how beautiful her work is. And so I feel like that it is very accepted, and, you know, and people just kind of do a double take, like, you've got to be kidding me. She can't see it all. I'm like, no, she can't see it all.
Yeah, but I feel very blessed. And I, you know, I think the community accepts me just fine. I feel very welcomed and accepted. Yeah.
Good. I just want to congratulate you for doing such a huge piece, and I hope it goes well.
Thank you.
I wish you good luck in your next endeavor.
Thanks. Thank you for having us, Sam. It means so much. You are so welcome.
I can't imagine. Did you say Africa? You did say Africa.
It's South America.
South America. Okay. South America.
And thanks for doing this program too, Sam. I've been listening to your program. It's wonderful. I've learned a lot.
Thank you very much. I wish you both the best of luck. And I hope that you will, I imagine that you'll be doing another piece in South America. So you'll have to come back.
Okay. We've got big plans. We are going to collaborate on a diff-abled series of comical things that have happened to us. And you will definitely have to come on and talk about that. That has happened to us. So I sometimes have to use a cane as well, because, you know, I just am not mobile at times and keep my balance and such. So I use a cane. And one day I was driving Annie somewhere and I got out of the car with my white cane and Annie got out with her cane. And there was this woman standing on the sidewalk looking at us both like, wait a minute, are they both blind? You know, and the woman just stared at us and stared at us and stared at us. And,
I can only imagine.
Meanwhile, we're just about rolling on the ground laughing like, well. So we're going to try and do an art show based on our musings of disabled life and, you know, like, a lot of times, you know, somebody will be like, they must be hard of hearing.
Oh, yeah, there is that.
And so they'll talk extra loud and that kind of thing. So it's kind of comical.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. And good luck. And we will talk soon.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. This has been Disability and Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks for tuning in. Charlene Dahl is my research woman. Good night, Charlene. Tonight, we were speaking with Annie Young. Annie is an artist who was talking about her exhibit, Journey to Rock Bottom. We were also speaking with Sherry Gruby. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. If you want to join us on our email list, you may email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Also, please feel free to hear our podcasts. We have lots of them up now. Thanks for listening. Good night. KFAI.org.